If that's not complicated enough, in addition to the main tithing system that we have just learned, there are numerous other regulations in the Torah that stipulate tithe-like practices on agricultural business in the land of Israel. For example, there's the mitzvah of giving bikurim, first fruits, to the priests. When the first of the crops would begin sprouting, the farmer would go out into his field and tie a string around these firstlings and declare them as bikurim. Although the Torah does not stipulate an amount, the sages set a minimum quantity of 1/60th with no maximum. And like the Truma Gedolah, large heave offerings, this applied only to the seven species of Deuteronomy 8:8. But unlike Truma Gedolah, which was simply given to a priest in any location, the Bikurim, first fruits, were actually brought to the temple and offered before the altar. Deuteronomy 26, verses 1 through 2 stipulates, "When you come into the land that the Lord your God is giving you for an inheritance, and have taken possession of it, and live in it, you shall take some of the first of all the fruit of the ground, which you harvest from your land that the Lord your God is giving you. And you shall put it in a basket, and you shall go to the place that the Lord your God will choose, to make his name to dwell there." The Torah goes on to specify a detailed process complete with a liturgical declaration to be set at the temple. The first fruits were brought to the temple any time between the festival of Shavuot and Sukkot. They could even be brought as late as Hanukkah, but it was ruled that if they were brought after Sukkot, no declaration was recited. The journey to bring the first fruits to the temple was an event in and of itself. The people walked in a celebratory fashion, with accompanying flute players being led by an ox whose horns were decorated with silver and gold, complete with olive branches atop his head. The first fruits themselves were placed in fancy baskets. Without a temple, the practice of first fruits is no longer observed today. There are also regulations about what may be picked or gathered and what may not be. Leviticus 19:9 tells us, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge, neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest." This verse actually gives two separate commandments. First, the corners or edges of the field are not to be gleaned, but rather left for the poor. This is called peah, which literally means corner. Although the Torah does not specify a specific amount, the sages said a minimum of 1/60th of the field must be left as peah. Second, the one who reaps is not permitted to go back and gather that which falls from his hand or sickle during the gleaning process. This is called leket, which literally translates gleanings. Reading on to verse 10, we find more mitzvot regarding a vineyard. "And you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. And you shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God." So traditionally, this has been interpreted as forbidding the gathering of olelot, which are the smaller, immature clusters of grapes still on the vine, as well as peret, which are clusters of grapes that have fallen during the picking process. These are to be left for the poor and the stranger. And as if that's not enough, Deuteronomy 24:19 states, "When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands." These forgotten sheaves are referred to in rabbinic literature as shicha, and are said to also include both that which was picked and then left, as well as that which is still attached because it was overlooked by the harvesters. All of these commandments are applicable within the land of Israel, and the sages felt that they should be extended to regions outside of Israel as well. Because none of these are temple dependent, they are also all observed today. Leviticus also gives us some regulations concerning fruit trees. In chapter 19, verses 23 through 25, it states, "When you come into the land and plant any kind of tree for food, then you shall regard its fruit as forbidden. 3 years it shall be forbidden to you, it must not be eaten. And in the fourth year, all its fruit shall be holy, an offering of praise to the Lord. But in the fifth year, you may not eat of its fruit, to increase its yield for you. I am the Lord your God. This is called the laws of Orla. Orla means blocked and refers to the forbidden fruit of the first 3 years of a tree's growth. This is calculated from Tu Bishvat, the new year of the trees, which is on the 15th of Shavat. Traditional halakhic ruling states that it's to be burned, and this law is observed even today both in and outside the land of Israel. In the fourth year, the fruit is called Natah Raveh, and is to be eaten in Jerusalem in a celebratory meal before Hashem. If this was not possible, they were redeemed, and the money was then spent in Jerusalem on food in the same manner as the Maaser Sheni, the second tithe. Today, the law of Natah Raveh is considered by most as only applicable within the land of Israel, and in practice today, the fruit is redeemed, and then it may be consumed. We have already mentioned that in the seventh year, all agricultural work was to cease. Exodus 23, verses 10 through 11 state, "For 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its yield, but the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. You shall do likewise with your vineyard and with your olive orchard." The seventh year was called the Shemitah year. Shemitah is Hebrew for release, because in this year all the crops were released, that is, become ownerless so that the poor may come and glean. In addition to other non-agricultural commandments, the Torah lists four prohibitions in Leviticus 25 regarding the seventh year: Zoreah, sowing; Zomer, pruning; Kotzer, reaping; and Botzer, picking. Thus, the field owner was not permitted to cultivate the soil or sow seed, prune, nor reap, or gather the harvest. The fields, vineyards, and fruit trees thus became ownerless, and individuals could only gather and harvest what was needed for immediate use. This was repeated in the Yovel, that is, the Jubilee year, which was the 50th year after a cycle of seven Shemitah, that is, sabbatical years. This meant that for 2 years in a row, all of the four prohibitions we mentioned applied. That is, there was a Shemitah year in the 49th year, and then a Yovel year, Jubilee year, in the 50th year. To top it off, all property outside of walled cities would then revert back to its original owner. This would, of course, include agricultural land. The Torah does not set up a capitalist economy, but rather one that is solely focused on the love of God and the love of one's neighbor. We should point out that both the sabbatical year and the Jubilee year are only observed in the land of Israel. Now that we live in a period without a temple, the Jubilee year is no longer observed at this time, but the sabbatical year still is. But wait, there's even more.